Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Clean Energy View Radio Show. Our podcasts are available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.cleanenergyview.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, or contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at info@cleanenergyview.com.
Today, my guest is Jessica Kellner, and we're going to be talking about her book called Housing Reclaimed, Sustainable Homes for Next to Nothing. The do-it-yourself home renovation concept is a very popular trend, especially with the high cost of home renovation and also the need to live more sustainably. Providing that you have the expertise or have the proper instruction, it can also be very cost-effective as it is good for the environment. The financial costs associated with purchasing a new home has also forced people to go back to basics. Now, this does not mean that you have to go back to living in a cave or anything like that. People get such a vivid imagination when it comes to these types of concepts, and it's really very simple. We're going to find out a little later on. There are so many different options. Homeowners are looking at the comfort and personalization of the home as opposed to buying something that is simply, quote, bigger and better. And that's really important. Instead of spending a fortune on brand new materials, people are opting to use materials from old building, or as the term is called, deconstruction, as well as other materials, often headed for landfills. Now, by embracing such concepts such as straw bale building, at the community level, people can learn to work together within their own communities to create a more affordable housing as they develop a more tight-knit community. And that's really important because when you have a tighter-knit community, one of the key benefits that most people fail to recognize is the fact that the tighter the community, the less crime. Because you have everybody basically looking out for one another, and it's a really nice environment to live in. There are a lot of questions that we've been getting in as far as how does one even begin such an endeavor. So we're going to be talking about the actual building basics that you need to know and how people can go about collecting reclaimed materials to use to actually build a house or even renovate. And one of the big questions is, why is insulation and thermal mass so important? What options are there for utilizing space as well as for creating space? This is a concept that seems complicated, but it's really not when you think about it. And also, how can you incorporate the natural color of the materials to enhance the actual beauty of your home? How can you create a landscape that also lends itself to sustainability? Now, my guest today is not only the author of the book, but she's also the editor of Natural Home and Garden magazine. And you can visit their website at naturalhomeandgarden.com. And she is very passionate about using architectural salvage to create aesthetically beautiful, low-cost housing. She writes and speaks about a practical, easy, and inexpensive solution for healthier and more environmentally sound homes and lifestyles with an emphasis on the values of recycling and using reclaimed materials. So I would like to welcome to the show Jessica Kellner. Good afternoon, Jessica, and welcome to the show.
Hi, June. Thank you.
Now, Jessica, there are so many things to talk about. I hope we can get everything crammed in within this hour segment. We've had so many questions. Facebook and Twitter and social media has just been tremendous. But what got you involved with just talking about this whole subject?
Well, it was kind of after, you know, all the news really broke about how bad the housing crisis was. The Economist called it the housing crisis of 2006 to 2008, but it was more around 2008 to 2009 that most of us were really starting to understand sort of how big this problem was and how much housing prices had been artificially inflated by the market, much beyond their actual value in materials. The market had led to a situation where it seemed as if it were better for everyone for housing prices to be going up, 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 and up. And then what we saw was the bottom dropped out, and it turned out, you know, it destroyed many people's lives, either financially or losing their home. And so after that happened, I had worked for the magazine Natural Home and Garden for many years, and I had seen several examples of people who had used reclaimed materials to build houses, whether it be on an individual level where this was an actual person or family who was going out collecting materials and building a home, or more of an organized structure. Some of the groups in my book are doing this for whole communities. And it struck me as just an interesting sort of paradox that we had all of these people in need of housing at this point, and all of this housing that had, you know, gone up and up and in price, and people taking out exorbitant mortgages that they couldn't afford. And at the same time, we have all of these this huge quantity of materials that's just going straight to the landfill. And that, you know, uniting those two things, showing people how those materials could be reused could sort of help reduce waste as well as be at least part of a solution for this big housing crisis that we were having. So that's what sort of caused me to have the idea and want to put this book out.
And I'm just curious, how much of your own home has been, I guess, reconstructed through these types of materials?
Well, I actually just moved into my first home a few months ago, this past summer, and it was right after... Oh, thanks. It was right after I had finished work on the book, and my husband and I actually had been talking about, you know, should we look for some land and try to do this? And then we landed upon this really amazing house that has a lot of green structures, and the former owner actually completely rehabbed a house that was on the property, and it's still a fairly small house. He did a fairly small remodel, and he did reuse a lot of the materials. So I haven't actually built a house in this method, but I do really want to do some of the ideas in the book, such as building an outbuilding out of an old grain silo or shipping pallets. You can put two together and make a second building or a guest house if you need the extra space, but you don't want to have to pay to condition it year-round and that kind of thing. So, yeah, my house has been definitely rehabbed and used a lot of reclaimed materials before I ever got to it, which is really fantastic.
Yeah, that sounds amazing that you were able to have that kind of luck. I mean,
it was amazing luck.
It's just interesting when you're looking at different homes. I mean, people starting to pay attention to the structures and exactly what renovation is going to cost them in years to come, and that's a very big subject, especially if you're looking at some of these structures where the materials that were used are not very or were not very durable, mm-hmm. and are also materials that are not very friendly to the environment.
Right.
No.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I know people are considering, and this, you know, reclaimed salvage materials can definitely play into that. That was what I wanted to sort of present in the book, was two sides of this concept. One is an individual who is, like I said, collecting items. The other side of it is a more of an organizational sort of industry-wide approach, where we need to be looking to deconstruction over demolition. You know, at this time, almost all houses that are going to be taken down are completely bulldozed, everything sent straight to the landfill, no consideration even for the easiest to salvage things to come out of that house. It's not encouraged, sometimes not even allowed for that to happen. And so that's something that needs to happen in the building and deconstruction industry as a change, in addition to people actually going out and collecting this stuff and using that in their own homes, which is sort of another component of the book.
Now, what's interesting is that you look at some major natural disasters that have occurred here, and I'm sure that this definitely happened in the South after Hurricane Katrina, where some of the materials were just, they couldn't use them because of mold or whatnot. But I do know that when there was a nor'easter, not the recent nor'easter that hit New York, but there was actually it was a storm that hit last spring that hit the New York area, and I remember the trees just uprooted, these gigantic trees. And what had happened was some of these trees landed on houses, basically, you know, demolishing the house. And what you're describing is basically what took place. You saw these bulldozers come in maybe a week or two later and just completely wipe out everything. And
right.
It's interesting that there are a lot of materials that can be reused. I know in other parts where people are renovating their house, for example, one material that is commonly recycled is bricks. mean, I have, my garden is actually lined with bricks that are from so many different houses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically people put ads out in the newspaper or Craigslist, what have you, and will say, you know, if anybody wants bricks, you know, let me know. And,
exactly.
And that's something that I think is tremendous, because, I mean, you could go to all the different home renovation stores and buy them brand new, but why? Why
exactly.
bother? Especially if you can get something that is going to basically wind up in the landfill, and it's something that you could use for a decorative measure as well as just for landscape structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the biggest threads that tied all of the stories in the book, and this is from individuals, you know, in the book there's three sort of families and individuals that I profile who built their own house with no construction loan, and they did it themselves. They collected the materials themselves. They went out in their community and got the word out that they wanted this stuff, and the things started pouring in, all the way to the more organizational approach where there's people who are doing this within their community. Either way, they say once you start getting that word out, once you start letting people know that you want this stuff before it goes to the landfill, it's not hard to accumulate. If anything, they got way more than they needed. You know, the one couple, they were a newlywed couple in Idaho, and they built their house out of almost all reclaimed materials. They said 5 years later, they were still getting people in the construction and deconstruction and industry in their area calling and saying, hey, we have these amazing cabinets. Do you guys want them? Could you use them? Do you know anyone that wants them? Because they're going to go to the landfill. And that doesn't make anyone feel good. It doesn't make anyone feel happy to think about perfectly good things going to the landfill. You know, everyone has sort of this natural, I think, aversion to that idea of I'm going to just take this perfectly good thing and throw it away for no reason. But in the most cases, there's nowhere else for that stuff to go. There's nowhere else, you know, unless these deconstruction people wanted to have their own eBay business selling it, which they don't. They don't have another alternative. And as soon as they start to find out, oh, there's someone in my community who wants to collect this stuff, there's somewhere else I could take this, bam, it starts coming in and rolling in. You know, Dan Phillips, he's the one who is in charge of the Phoenix Commotion in Texas, which is an amazing organization. They're building these unbelievably amazing houses all over their town. They've transformed whole neighborhoods, and it's all using reclaimed materials. And he says, the first thing that you need to do if you want to take on a project like this is get a shed, because once you get your word out there, the stuff is going to start pouring in and you need a place to put it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's interesting. When 9/11 hit, I remember all over the news they were pleased for any type of construction companies to come in to haul away all of the materials. And if you think about it, you know, the buildings that came down, there was a lot of marble. There was a lot of really valuable materials that were basically up for grabs.
Right.
And it's amazing. I mean, it's a very expensive process because you need to pay for the labor. Then if there's any type of cleanup involved with the materials, I don't know what the process is or how they go about doing it, but I'm sure that they had to make sure that the materials were safe to handle, especially with all the different toxic chemicals that were, you know, in the
mm-hmm.
environment itself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just amazing when you think about I would have to say that it was in the millions of dollars with all the materials that were just basically up for grabs. And you know, when you think about where those materials probably are at this point, it's really interesting. And that's true with basically any major building where they're looking to get rid of some of the materials because they're still good, and there's no reason why they need to just be the building needs to be just completely demolished and then hauled off to the landfills. It's such an expense to do that as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, using these materials, like I said, everyone in this book is making these homes with no construction loan. They're doing it, gathering the materials. As you mentioned, a lot of community building goes on with this. People, you know, the family that I feature who's in Colorado, they built a home that was a straw bale home that's, aside from the straw bale, almost entirely reclaimed materials in terms of the interior. And they had big parties all of their friends would come, they would help them, and then in turn they would help them, you know, build a straw bale house, or, okay, they've learned how to do straw bale and now maybe they're going to use it in the future. And it was a way for them to meet people in their community. It was a way for them to participate in educating people in their community, as they also had been educated before they started their home. They went to another person's home and worked on a work party with them to learn how to do it. And so it's really interesting, and it's really kind of a grassroots thing when you're going from house to house and helping each other. You know, it has that barn-raising quality. And it's really amazing when you read the stories of these people and how their houses connected them, not just with them with each other, but also with their entire region in terms of both their community as well as, like, their architectural history. You know, these houses now have bits, kind of like you were saying, you know, things that come out of certain buildings. All the parts of these houses have some kind of background. They have a history that they're bringing into your home that makes your home a much richer environment than just, you know, a thrown-up, quick, toxic, white, you know, walls that have drywall from China. It's a totally different experience to be in a house that has all of these old materials and all these materials that come with their own kind of set of personal history.
Well, it's kind of, it's almost the way that things were done, not only when the pioneers were settling the land. I mean, that was a community-based effort, but also if you think about it, the way that even, for example, here in New York, I know some of the old families, you'll see some of the marble that was basically brought over on a ship from Europe over here, and you'll hear some of the older families talk about different parts of the house, how this was brought over from Europe or that was brought over from Europe. Actually, it's funny. A friend of mine was telling me a story about how his grandfather brought over, it was either his grandfather or his father brought over a fig tree from Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big centerpiece in his yard. And it's just kind of interesting how you have little bits and pieces from the other people's homes, you know, relatives and whatnot, and they'll take certain things, whether it's a stained glass window or a fixture or just even some of the wood from a barn, and then they'll use it to build, you know, another part of the house. But it's just the sentimental value that comes with those materials that really gives, I think, an additional value, because it's all part of the story and the history and so on and so forth, and it just really lends itself, you know.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I just want to ask you really quickly, because we actually have a caller that's been patiently on hold.
Oh.
Can you talk about briefly what the process is, what straw bale building actually is?
Sure, absolutely. Straw bale is essentially bales of straw, and they are stacked within, generally you have kind of a framework that you use, and you stack them, they're 4 feet across, and so you stack them in rows, and then you cover it with a mud, essentially. It's, you can make it out of several, like, many things, but it usually has some clay, some soil, some water, and then usually, like, some straw or some other material that's native to the area that helps kind of bind everything together. If you want a recipe to actually make your own, we do have one online at naturalhomeandgarden.com. Otherwise, there's a lot of online, you'll find many different recipes for how to kind of make it. And from what most people have told me, it's a very kind of intuitive, you make it to the thickness that you think will work, and then you start experimenting with it, and you want to sort of do a test area and let it dry, and then once you feel that you have that right consistency, then you can go forward with the whole wall. And the nice thing about it is it's very hands-on, it's completely non-toxic, so anyone can do this. You can have young children, you can have, you know, elderly people, you can dig right in with your hands, you don't have to worry about gloves or breathing masks or anything like that. And it's highly insulative. Because the walls are really thick, it helps hold in heat. It's also really healthy for indoor air quality, because the straw bales and the clay walls can breathe, and so it allows moisture to move in and out of the house rather than being stuck inside where it can cause mold. It's a very natural sort of process where that moisture can be released easily without getting stuck in. And it is just a very healthy, very sort of natural feeling in a strobial house. And yeah, that's pretty much the basics. It's actually very simple, and it's very user-friendly and very hands-on.
Thank you, Jessica. And we're going to talk more in a bit about more of the basic types of building that are people need to consider. But we do have someone that's been patiently on hold. So caller from the area code 870, do you have a question for Jessica?
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon, Jessica. Calling from around the Mississippi Delta area. And
hello.
Mainly just wanted, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. I've more on the, artistic side of reclaiming the materials. I've got a studio where I tear down and demolish the old dance halls and clubs and things I find just strictly to reclaim the materials and use them in artwork. My studio itself is furnished with, I built all the benches and tables and also put the old metal from the roof of the buildings on the wall, is siding on the walls. So try to reclaim, you'll give it the character to give these materials a new life.
Mm-hmm.
And then also have a little bit of historic significance, like you mentioned, using the details from an older structure. You can get something, the piece of history that can live on and inspire people to maybe, they weren't able to go into that original building, but maybe a piece of that can draw their imagination to where, they could inspire them to create something along the same lines.
Yeah.
It's interesting. When you look at some of the mansions around the country, I know here in New York, some of the old estates, you'll find that's very common to see different materials being used on other properties. It's just amazing. Also, I just wanted to make one brief comment. What you do is, from what it sounds like you're doing, it kind of reminds me, there's a popular show called Restaurant Impossible. And it's kind of neat because they basically take this restaurant, they rip it down, and they try to renovate it as much as possible with a minimal budget. And I think that, this is obviously a concept that many people, including business owners, are really paying attention to. And I think the work that you're doing, especially with taking these materials from these clubs and whatnot, I think that's fantastic because if you look at the cost for building a brand new facility, I'm just curious, what would a brand-new facility cost in today's world?
Oh, my. You're looking, anywhere from $40 to $100 a square foot versus just your elbow grease and the, a little bit of, you can have the work of restoring, pulling nails, and sometimes you'll have to, reduce the thickness and things to make it more uniform, especially you get 100-year-old timbers. They weren't interested in back then and having nice, clean, easy, uniform pieces from the sawmill.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that I really liked one of the things that one of the homeowners said, Aaron Powers. He's the guy that built with his wife their little home in Idaho, and he said, well, it's kind of a trade-off for the resources that we did have for the resources we didn't have. Building with reclaimed materials definitely took more time and more energy on our part. We had to go out. We had to seek out these materials. We had to find them. We had to haul them back. We had to generally process them in some way, like you're saying, remove nails, maybe sand them down, whatever processing goes into them. And he's like, so all of that, of course, was consuming of our time and our energy. But we're young people. We have a lot of energy. We were willing to sacrifice our time. We didn't have money. So he's like, it's sort of
a trade-off.
If we went out and bought all this stuff, it would have cost us a lot more of a resource that we didn't have. So instead we used what we did have, and we created a really amazing home that we love more than something that we probably could have paid more money for. But, yes, I mean, there is a time investment. There is a labor investment that you can't just, have an amazing house built out of reclaimed materials. Well, I suppose you could have it done for you, but then it's going to cost you a lot of money. So it is definitely a trade-off, but I think it's valuable because you end up with a home that means a lot more to you, in a home that, as we've said, the materials inside actually have sort of their own history and their own meaning, and so it's kind of a twofold payoff.
Oh, I agree.
Oh, yeah, and this is Tim, correct?
Yes, it is. I call it, when I'm out there raising an old building or a barn or something, I call it dancing with the scars. You got to kind of dance around, get out of the way of wasps and spiders and nails and things, but the rewards are well worth it. I mean, you've got mm-hmm. something that here's a historic piece, or maybe like Elvis Presley played in some of the places that I've taken down.
Cool.
You just can't find any kind of history like that in a brand new sterile metal building.
Exactly. One of the other gentlemen, Guy Baker, he's the father of a family who built their home in Wedowee, Alabama, and he talks about that the value inherent in it and the quality. He says, you know, I would go work in a house that was 100 years old, and I'm taking it down, and the wood is in solid condition. It doesn't have damage. It doesn't have termite damage. It's really hot, you know, solid, high-quality wood. And then he's like, I would go work on something that was, you know, 10 or 15 years old, and the things would be much farther deteriorated than this 100-year-old wood that I had found in another building. And so it's another thing of just the quality and the sort of heft and strength and durability of the materials that were used back then are different than the materials used now. You know, they were old-growth forest, which we try to protect now. And so it just had a different sort of caliber in terms of lasting and being able to be reused compared with the things we use today for the most part.
No, I completely agree. I think the fact that our forests have been subjected to so many chemicals and all sorts of stuff, that it makes its impact on the quality of the wood that you're now able to get. And the wood back then, it was free from all this industrial pollution. And, mm-hmm. you know, let's face it, just because pollution takes place in one part of the state doesn't mean that it's not going to affect, a forest that might be located in another. I mean, mm-hmm. air does travel. And it's just kind of interesting, just listening to the two of you talk, it reminds me of basically the old farmer's mentality. Because basically when you live in a farm, which I grew up on a farm, you learn to use different materials that normally people just would not think to use. You just learn how to be very resourceful, and you'll basically transform one material into something basically out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
Tim, I'm just curious, with the businesses that you've done this for, do you see more business owners, when they're looking to renovate their businesses, do you see them looking to do this as opposed to just building from scratch with all brand new stuff?
Oh, absolutely. It's getting more difficult for me to find good choice materials anymore, as a matter of fact. It's actually, there's so much more of this interest out there that as more and more people are doing so, that just it makes it more difficult to find.
I know, we should not tell anybody about this, right?
We did the best thing. My oldest girl is an artist. She makes prints. And so we'll use every bit of it we can, especially like the old cypress timbers and things. And she will take and cut the blocks, do reduction print, fine art from them too. So, I mean, it's something that we even use those little odds and ends pieces that can't be used for structure or for furniture, you know, not large enough for
mm-hmm.
other purposes.
And that's basically repurposing these scrap materials to enhance the beauty, which is also something that is discussed in the book. And, you know, it's just a great thing that you're doing. You're taking advantage, Tim, of all these different materials and just really using everything that's available to you. If you could, share with our audience the name of your business.
Well, I have a company I do, actually. I'm a photographer, but my studio is called the Delta 9 Studio, and it's on along the Rock and Roll Highway, Highway 67, in northeast Arkansas, and we're in a poor area of the country. I mean, you talk about folks using materials. A lot of people don't have a lot of money around here, so you really see a lot of reclaiming and folks use every bit that they can. There's not a lot of waste, because, you know, poor folks, they can't afford to waste things.
Mm-hmm. And that's really a smart way to go, especially if you can use materials that would otherwise wind up in the landfill. Tim, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Tim.
Thank you. Y'all have a great afternoon.
You too.
You too.
Jessica, I want to just talk about a little bit what we were talking about before about the building basics. Now, you had talked about straw bale building. What are some of the other building basics that people should know about as far as different options?
There are, of course, several options. There's cob building, which is kind of similar. It's also using sort of a slurry. There's several different building techniques that use a different sort of structural base under a mud wall kind of construction technique. And so some of them use, cob uses wood, like firewood, and you build that up as the interior, and then you cover it with the slurry. Otherwise, straw bale, like I said, same thing. There's also earth ships. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They were pioneered by a man in the Southwest in the 80s, and they use recycled tires under sort of a mud wall. Let's see.
It's very interesting that there are so many different options. I mean, you don't really think about this, but there are many different options out there that can suit anyone's budget, and I think that's something that people should really take into consideration, especially since with home renovation, it can be really very expensive if you don't think this thoroughly.
Now, absolutely, and there are other methods, of course, like structural insulated panels, which are more expensive and more of a sort of you have to have an architect. But all of the ones that are kind of hands-on, in general, there's some kind of very solid, heavy something that forms the basis of the walls, and then you're using that, like I said, very hands-on, very easy-to-use straw clay mixture as your wall.
Now, one of the things that I just want to point out to the audience is that before you begin any project, and this is something that I advise for anything that's a major, major commitment, and when I used to teach classes, I would instruct my students to do the same. The first thing that you want to do is to gather all of your information, which options you'd like to pursue, and make a journal. Actually, get one of those little storage containers and gather all of your materials. This way you can just price out what your expenses are going to be and where you're going to be or what materials you're going to be using. And just keep a journal of everything that you'd like to do, but don't tackle everything all at once. It's very important to do things in small increments, because otherwise what happens, especially to many homeowners as well as people who begin these big projects, is they get started and then they kind of lose their motivation to finish it, and then it winds up not being completed. So that's something that I just wanted to quickly point out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as your building the material options, what other places can you suggest to our audience as far as where they can source materials?
Well, I would start by going, if you want to learn about this, going to the Building Materials Reuse Association website. They are a nonprofit organization that is really dedicated to advancing the idea of deconstruction. Their website is bmra.org, so that's Building Materials Reuse Association. And if you go there, they have a searchable list, state by state, of resources where you can go to search for salvage. And so that's a really useful website. Also, in my book in the back, there is a state by state listing of where you can go to find salvage. And you're going to find two kind of very different types of salvage shops. You're going to find the one that is more curated, more high end, really beautiful things that have been selected from specific buildings, and those are going to generally be more expensive. And then you're going to find the more kind of dig through it, you know, treasure hunt salvage place where the stuff is going to be in much worse condition, but you need to kind of go with an eye toward what can this, you know, what would this look like with a sanding or with a coat of paint, and, you know, how could I use this in a creative way? And so you need to sort of decide, you know, which one you're looking for. And it could be a good idea to call these places in ahead of time and find out where they get their materials from, what kind of store you're in for, so you don't waste your time, you know, especially if you have to drive anywhere out of the city or anything like that to get to them. You want to make sure that it's going to be worth your time. And that would be the first thing. And then I would also advise everybody, if you're interested in doing your own home, to look into workshops in your area. If you search on Google, for example, Straw Bale Building Association and your state name, New York, you're going to find a lot of different communities, groups, associations, especially somewhere like New York where there's, you know, a million different options for you. You're going to find tons of people who are probably going to have a similar interest. And I would absolutely advise, if you're going to do any kind of building on your own, such as Straw Bale, that you go participate in some workshops beforehand. You're helping somebody else do what they want to do. You're learning. And you're also going to hook into a community of people who could probably help you out, whether they're going to come to your home if you're going to have a Straw Bale building party, or they're just going to have an email list that you can ask questions. You know, get engaged with the community, because you're going to need support. You don't want to do this all on your own. You're going to want to be able to refer to people who have done this before, who can answer your questions, who can say, oh, yes, I had such and such problem, and this was my solution.
Sharing is caring.
Exactly.
Oh, we have another call. Caller from the area code 660. Do you have a question for Jessica? Did we lose the caller? I hope not. Caller from the area code 660, are you still there? Okay, unfortunately, I think
we lost them.
Not able to connect. Yeah, we've had a number of calls on the switchboard, but that's great, because that just means that people love you, Jessica, and that's what matters. Now, getting back to these community-based initiatives, I think that that's an excellent concept, but because of another reason, which is you can learn about something that you've participated in and what it looks like in somebody else's house, or what a particular house looks like, before you dive in and decide, okay, this is what I want for myself. Because once you build it, it's a big project, number one. Number two, it's with all the work that goes into it, it's not something that you can say, oh, you know what, I don't like it, let's just change this. It's a big commitment. That's why earlier I had said, take a look at all of your options. Take a look at what's required. And also, when it comes to certain towns, there are many towns, especially in more of the suburban areas, where there are permits that are required to construct certain types of buildings or whatever the case may be. Like, Jessica has some really great ideas for an outdoor fire pit in which the people took some stones and they built this beautiful outdoor fireplace. And if, depending upon where you're located, some of the towns will allow it without a permit, but there are many towns that do require a permit, and that's basically for safety reasons, especially if you're in close quarters. So make sure that you check with your local zoning boards. The local towns should be able to tell you what you need and what you don't. I mean, they'll tell you very quickly, no, you don't need a permit, or yes, you do, what the cost is and how to go about applying for it. And if you don't know how to contact your local zoning board or the town, you can either go online to your state's, the county's local government office, or it's usually located in the blue pages of the yellow book. And I just wanted to mention that. Now, another question that I have is, when it comes to insulation and thermal mass, why are those two very important things to think about when you're building a structure?
Well, insulation, of course, is, you know, how well your building is going to hold in heat and hold out cold. And so, obviously, you want to have a structure that's very well insulated so that it's going to be less expensive to heat and cool. It's going to be more comfortable. And, you know, just isn't going to waste energy by having your heating or cooling kind of pouring out into the world. Thermal mass is the thickness of the walls and how well they're able to hold heat and release it over time. And so thermal mass is really useful when, let's say you live in a cold climate and you are able to put a heavily an item with a lot of thermal mass on the south side, which is the sunny side. Let's say sometimes people construct houses actually with different building techniques, and they'll use like a straw wall on the south side because it has a lot of thermal mass. And so when the sun hits it during the day, it slowly heats up, and then it will hold that heat, and when the temperature cools down, it will slowly release that heat into your home. And so it's extremely useful to help keep the house naturally warm without having to rely on fossil fuels. Insulation, again, is just how well it can actually keep air from moving in and out of the house.
And that's extremely important, especially with the cold weather approaching us here in the Northeast and many other parts of the country. The cost of heating a home is astronomical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting how just some very basic ideas people tend to forget, such as adding an extra liner around the windows just to keep your house warm. But when you're actually building or reconstructing something, to be able to reconstruct a part of your house so that you don't need to necessarily go nuts every winter just doing all sorts of things just to keep your house warm, this really actually a nice break for a change, because it seems as though there's so much done just to prepare for the winter, and lo and behold, it would be nice if that were the case all year round, because what insulates the home during the winter also keeps it cool during the summer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And another great idea for, as I was kind of alluding to earlier, and Aaron and Megan Powers, the newlywed couple in Idaho, they did this. They built a second building, an outbuilding, out of a green silo, and it houses a guest house as well as an office that they use part of the time, and it also has sailboat storage underneath. The smart thing about using an outbuilding, if you are going to have an addition or something that you only use some of the time, it's really great to have it actually be separated from your house, because then you don't have to condition it year-round. You can, you know, keep it cooler when you don't have guests or when no one's going to be using it, and then you can, you know, bump it up when you do actually want to use that space. But it's something to keep in mind. We will often mention that in the magazine, just to consider if you want this structure to be a part of the main house, or if you would like it to be a separate structure so that it is, you know, completely independent in terms of heating and cooling and all of that, compared with the rest of your house, if you want to have more space but not necessarily have more square footage within the main building.
Yeah, I think that's really an excellent point to mention. And it's interesting, a colleague of mine actually took what used to be an old chicken coop and turned it into his office.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, every time he has clients that come to his, it's basically a home office, and it's actually really quite nice.
Uh-huh.
And he always tells the story of way back once upon a time when this area was all farmland, this was an actual chicken coop. And it's just hard to believe because of the way that it was reconstructed, and it's so beautiful. It's hard to believe that once upon a time you had chickens galore inside the building.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the questions that I had for you is, if someone is going to begin a home, we'll start off with a home renovation project, what area do you suggest that people start off first? Because, I mean, the house is such a big area. I mean, what do you advise as far as a good starting place?
Well, the best starting place, absolutely, for any home renovation is to take some time. Let's say you take a month, maybe you want it to be shorter, 2 weeks, whatever. But take some time and take a notebook and just track how you and your family use your house. what rooms do you actually spend time in? What rooms do you not spend time in? What areas do people seem to sort of gravitate towards? What areas do they seem to avoid? At what time of day? At what time of year? And just start to sort of take note of those things. Sometimes people don't even realize that they have, you know, a certain space that no one ever uses, or that they have a certain space that people obviously are using a lot and that it could be sort of expanded. We had a really fantastic article that's actually out in the magazine that's on newsstands now, and it's called Space Case. And that was the whole point of this article, was to think about your home in terms of how you could make your actual current home work better for you. And so it's really a matter of thinking about what parts of your home are serving you well and what parts of your home are not serving you well, and what can you do to improve the situation. How can you enhance the parts of your home that are serving you well? You know, maybe you have a basement that you have converted into, you know, a living room and a workout room, and everybody always hangs out in there, but nobody ever uses the workout room. Well, can you relocate that and give yourself more space in the area that people do use? Or maybe everybody's always finding themselves in the kitchen, but it's a really tight kitchen. Well, what ways could you potentially open up that kitchen? Maybe you have a dining room that you don't use very much, and you can remove a wall or partially remove a wall to unite those two spaces so that you have a bigger functional area and less wasted space. And so that's what I absolutely would recommend anybody do, is just take some time to notice how the house is serving you and think about, you know, what do I wish that I had room for that I don't? What do I have room dedicated towards that I don't necessarily use? So that's the first stepping point.
And that's an excellent, excellent suggestion. I know so many people that have these beautiful basements that are finished, and for the most part, they turn it into like this pseudo-exercise room, and basically you'll find typically a Stairmaster or a treadmill, and you'll find that it's used to hang up stuff on.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's amazing.
And, you know, if you want to use that, think critically, okay, maybe I want to use this Stairmaster. What's preventing me from using it? Is it that I don't like this part of the house? Maybe this area needs more light? Is it I want to watch television while I'm doing this and I need to move this to a place where I can do that? Sort of just analyze each space. Why am I not using this? And don't, you know, lie to yourself and say, oh, well, I've been lazy, but I'm going to use it. Mm. Really try to think about what is it that keeps me from doing this. And, I mean, if it's the fact that you just don't want to use that Stairmaster, then get rid of it. You're wasting room in your house. And if it is something that you want to use, try to think about where you could put it or what you could do to make that area more appealing. And like I said, really try to tune in to your habits, your lifestyle, and is your house supporting that or is it hindering it? Because it's your home. You should, you know, especially in this real estate market, that's another thing we love to say. You know, this isn't a real estate market where you're saying, well, what is the next buyer going to want? People are staying in their homes for longer periods of time. Go ahead and customize your house. Go ahead and give yourself the license to create a home designed for you and your lifestyle. Don't hold out on it because you think, oh, well, what if someone else in the future doesn't want this? That's just not, you know, that's not a way to live your life. This is your house where you're living right now. Like, take
exactly.
advantage of it.
Yeah, you can't live your life because what if they don't like this? What if they don't like that?
Yeah.
I remember someone who had a beautiful, beautiful landscape that they painstakingly designed, and it was just beautifully manicured. And lo and behold, they sold it to someone who seemed to be the ideal couple, yada, yada, yada. And it turned out that they had to move and sold it to someone else who basically just wiped everything out and built a brand new home on top of what they mm-hmm. currently had there. So all the work, all the effort, the time, energy, you name it, all for nil. Everything
right.
was just wiped out with one bulldozer, basically because whoever the new property owner was didn't like the home for whatever reason, didn't know the history, didn't know anything about the precious trees that had been planted, and didn't really care for that matter, and was just looking at it from an investment standpoint where, okay, well, if I build this type of a house, this is what I'm going to get for my return on my investment, and that was basically it. So you can't live your life for other people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, go ahead and make your home customized to you. And that's another, the second point is before you add on, before you think, oh, I'm going to, I need to move, I need to add on, think about if you're using your spaces to their maximum capacity. You know, are you, if you're a big crafter and you have a guest bedroom that gets used once or twice a year and you don't have anywhere to do your crafts and you're completely, you have it all over the house and it's disorganized, make that guest bedroom your hobby room. You can still have a single bed in there or whatever, or maybe you get a fold-away couch or an air mattress. I mean, you should not have something that you could use every day or every week because you're holding out for something that, a guest uses two times a year. That just doesn't make sense. So be selfish in this regard. Make your house how you want it to be. This is your home. You pay the mortgage. You live there.
Exactly. And just out of curiosity, with your home, are there any projects that you intend to tackle next year?
Oh, gosh. There are so many projects I hope to tackle.
Where to begin?
Yeah. Well, our house, it's beautiful. It's totally livable. There was one part of the home that had never been remodeled, and it's the only part of the house that's completely original, untouched. And so we do want to take out the old drywall. It has the, textured ceilings. And we want to tear all of that out. And then we've been really looking about different materials that we want to use. I really want to put some clay walls inside of our house because I love them. They're so beautiful. They're so tactile and just gorgeous. So we've been talking about putting clay in there. We've been talking about all the flooring options. I'm in a bad situation of sort of, I think I know too much for my own good in terms of the options because I want all of them. So that's the one probably top of our list sort of thing we're going to be working on.
That sounds like I can't wait to hear a year from now how you've come along with it. And please send pictures because before and after is always intriguing.
Yeah.
I love reading people's blogs where they talk about their home renovation projects, and it's just amazing. Especially when someone is really making a very big concerted effort to be as environmentally friendly as possible. And, it's amazing how things just happen when you least expect it. But when you learn from other people, it's amazing how many hurdles you can avoid
mm-hmm.
by just observing what they've been through. And when you come into or when you come across a situation that could go in many different directions, how you handle it. So just learning and listening to other people, I think, is just so incredibly important. I know myself, I have it's a shed that is on my property that I intend to renovate next year, and I'm going to check out some of the suggestions that you've made in the book, and I'm also contemplating building a greenhouse.
Oh, cool.
It's something that I've always wanted, but, it's interesting. You could go to any of these garden centers and just buy a structure and be done with it, but the thing is that what I found is most of these structures, they break apart after a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if it's going to be something that's going to get a lot of use, you really want to put a little elbow grease into it because it's something that will last a very long time. And that actually will add to your property's value if you do decide to sell at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So, when you're making these changes on your property, don't think, will potential buyer like this or not? Just go with the assumption that you're going to sell it to somebody that thinks the way that you do, because obviously if somebody's attracted to your home, they're going to be attracted to it for the same reason that you were.
Right.
And I think that's such an important thing to remember.
Exactly.
Now, another question that I have is when it comes to taking some of the natural beauty from some of these pieces and incorporating it into your home,
I've often found that you can really go nuts with it if you're not careful. So do you have any suggestions as far as that's concerned? Because, I mean, it's great if you want this earthy feel, but I mm-hmm. think that you need to have a little bit of a balance, because otherwise you almost give, when you have friends and family that visit, they might think that you've spent way too much time outdoors.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's actually interesting. We also have a feature in this same current issue called Savvy Salvage, and that it was another book excerpt from a woman named Joanne Palmisano, and her book is called Salvage Secrets. Yes, Salvage Secrets. And it was much more sort of design oriented than my book. It was more about using these materials within interior design rather than maybe building a house out of them. And she gives some advice and says, you know, first of all, you need to kind of consider what your showpiece is going to be, and then not completely overwhelm it. You know, if you have a huge, let's say, antique chandelier that you want to put in your bedroom, let that be the showpiece, and let the other things sort of scale back and not be quite so elaborate or attention-getting, because otherwise, you know, everything starts to compete. So when you're working in each room, you want to kind of allow one or two things, depending on the size of the room, to be the star. You know, if you're in a living room and you're going to buy a really beautiful antique mantle, let's say, for your fireplace, that's great. That can be a beautiful thing, but then don't have that competing with a gigantic light fixture and with crazy floors and with some huge piece of furniture. You know, you want to, like you said, achieve balance. And so it's a really good idea when you're shopping to take photographs, unless you find something that, oh, I'm totally in love with this, you know, then buy it and you can store it and see how it works with other things. But take photographs, take samples of fabrics or colors, so you really are kind of thinking of this as an integrated whole. She also had a good advice, I think, that designing a house is sort of like designing a good workout, and you want to start with the major muscles. You want to start with sort of the overall upper body, lower body, and think of it with your big things, your walls, your floor, the major components of the room, and then work your way down. So the last thing that you're picking is sort of maybe your doorknobs and your drawer pulls and that kind of thing, and you've established the big and then moved down to the small. But as she says in the book, and I think is true, when you're, you know, this, when you're shopping or searching or whatever you're doing for this salvage, sometimes you're going to find stuff that you just absolutely love. And if you absolutely love it and you have to have it, well, then design the room around that piece and make sure that, you know, you love those drawer pulls, so make sure that your walls and floor work with that. But I definitely would advise you to pick and choose the items that are the most special to you, that are going to really be your standout, and then design around those. Don't just, as you said, kind of go in a flurry of buying a whole bunch of salvage stuff and then completely fill your house with it and not know where to go from there.
Yeah, I have vivid memories of people that I've known throughout the years who basically have emulated a show from the 70s called Sanford and Son. Well, you know something, you visit some of, it's interesting when you go house hunting and you just look at the way that people decorate or just how they've utilized certain things, it's like, okay, you know, that's I think one of the reasons why some people are turned off by the whole concept. But, you know, folks, if you have something that is really a beautiful piece, just work with it. Go with things that will enhance it, not take away from it. Jessica, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It has been wonderful just talking about your book, Housing Reclaimed, and just all the different tips and everything that you've shared with our audience.
Thank you so much, June. I've really enjoyed it.
Folks, we are out of time. Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Clean Energy View Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.